You are listening to Pastor Talk.
All right, why a book on curious Christians? That sounds kind of demonic.
Demonic, huh?
Yeah, that's... you know, you don't want to be curious. God knows everything. You know God, so why be curious?
Well, I would. If somebody says they know God well enough to not be curious, I would have some questions about their theology of who God is.
Welcome to Pastor Talk, the podcast of Lifeway Pastors, giving you the tools and encouragement you need to shepherd your flock well. I'm your host, Marty Durham. My guest today on Pastor Talk is Barnabas Piper. Barnabas is the author of The Pastor's Kid, Finding Your Own Faith and Identity, Help My Unbelief, Why Doubt is Not the Enemy of Faith, and The Curious Christian, just released, How Discovering Wonder Enriches Every Part of Life. Barnabas co-hosts the popular Happy Rant podcast and Five Leadership Questions podcast and writes for the Blazing Center as well as numerous other publications and websites. Barnabas lives in Nashville, Tennessee, where he works for Lifeway Christian Resources. Barnabas is a friend, and I'm glad to have him on Pastor Talk today. Here's my conversation with Barnabas Piper. Barnabas Piper, welcome to Pastor Talk.
I've never heard you that excited, Marty.
I've never been that excited. See, you're in studio, though.
That's right. It's live and face-to-face.
This is like one of my lifetime goals was to have you in a studio doing an interview.
It's a sad life.
Well, you know, it's getting better all
or is
the time.
Or is it more like you set the bar real low so that, you know, you can't disappoint yourself?
What bar?
Exactly. There you go.
So have we been friends long enough now to say long-time friend? Because it's only been like, what, 2.5 years or something like that?
Yeah, 3.5 years. So, yeah, I think once you pass the three-year mark, that's a long time.
Long-time friend. Long time. So, Barnabas Piper, this is your third book. Is that right already?
That is correct.
So are you ahead of pace for the other members of your family who have published?
Goodness sakes. I have probably written more books at 34 than my father had at 34. But
not cumulative page totals.
Yeah, and not as much Greek exegesis either. I took first semester Greek 3 times. He taught Greek, so that's the difference between he and I.
All right. Well, you know, you got to do something. So tell us a little bit about yourself. That's maybe something somebody doesn't know about Barnabas Piper.
Oh, something. Goodness sakes. Well, since this is the same podcast studio that we do the Five Leadership Questions podcast in, I figure I should tell people that I'm an ENTP on the Myers-Briggs. If you don't know what that is, that's okay. And
that means he's lesser than everybody else.
But I think I'm more important.
That's exactly it.
And I talk a lot about it. I have been with Lifeway for about 3.5 years, which is as long as we have known each other in person, although I think we might have been Twitter friends prior to that.
Yes, you stalked me for about 3 months.
While I was trying to get a job.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Thank you.
You thought I was an HR.
I just thought, he seems interesting. Let's find all of our inroads. Just recently, as of the beginning of this year, moved positions within Lifeway. So I now work for B&H Academic and Word Search Bible Software. So I oversee the marketing for those two. Prior to that, I was in leadership development, so we worked with churches on staff training, leadership development, leadership pipeline, those kinds of things. And so, yeah, I've been in Nashville for about 3 years. Prior to that, I was in Chicago, grew up in Minnesota, am a sadly dyed-in-the-wool Minnesota sports fan, which means, which means I'm sort of perpetually curmudgeonly about all things sports because they never give me anything to be happy about.
So you're just, I mean, you're barely a step below the Atlanta fans, though, because they always get to the brink, like, as close as you can get, and then it's like, we're just not going to bother.
The Vikings have enough success to perpetually break hearts. The Twins and the Timberwolves just stink.
But the Twins beat the Braves.
And I remember that. That was the high point of my sports fandom. I was 8 years old.
So your book is called Curious George the Christian. No, that's not right. What is it?
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button Christian.
The Curious Christian. I wonder why there was no man with a big yellow hat on the front. That was kind of disappointing. How Discovering Wonder Enriches Every Part of Life. So I have started this book. I'm about 30% done. Very interesting. My wife has a copy, and she's probably farther along in it than I am. She's actually already quoted you on Facebook, which is kind of weird.
Wow.
When I see something like that.
That's a...
Coming from my family. I mean, that kind of hurts, actually.
Because they don't quote you.
No, they don't quote me, yeah. So, okay.
To be fair, I don't quote my dad either. So.
All right. Why a book on curious Christians? That sounds kind of demonic.
Demonic, huh?
Yeah. That's... You know, you don't want to be curious. God knows everything. You know God. So why be curious?
Well, I would, if somebody says they know God well enough to not be curious, I would have some questions about their theology of who God is.
You have some problems with that?
I would. That would give me pause. Let's say, I think the premise of that whole idea of curiosity has to stem from the fact that we are finite and flawed creatures who were created to be image bearers and reflectors of an infinite and perfect God. So there's this massive disparity between what we are and what we're supposed to be. And how do we get to the place of actually reflecting who God is, given our limitations? And I think the only way that we can grow in that, we'll obviously never do it perfectly, but the only way we can grow in it is intentional curiosity. Starting with curiosity about God, because if He is infinite, that means we have an endless opportunity to discover and encounter more of God. We'll max out our knowledge in certain things. We will reach points at which we just have to say, "I don't understand." We will not understand how God does certain things and what He does and the extent of His will and all of those things. But we can perpetually grow in likeness to God and in awareness of Him and in recognizing what He's doing in the world. And that's when curiosity turns outward. So instead of just focusing on God, we begin to look at God as creator. So where are His fingerprints all over the world? And we begin to appreciate the image-bearing capacity of other people and other cultures and nature and various aspects of creativity and those kinds of things. And so it becomes sort of this endless web of opportunities to discover God's work and God's self.
So in a sense, it's the solution to us living a life of fatalism, where it's just que sera, sera, whatever will be. Because a lot of people who are Christians, I think, they actually live that way. They don't say it,
yeah,
and they may not even think it, but they really do, because if something happens, oh, well, that's just what God wanted to happen. And there is no sense of why and what happens now, and was there anything behind that I should have seen or could have seen or been recognized? Is curiosity a way to combat fatalism?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think fatalism is, it's one thing to rest in God's sovereignty and say, you know, there are things that happen outside of our control, and we say God is in control and we can rest in that. But resting in God's sovereignty is different than just sort of passivity or fatalism, as you said, which is just sort of that shrug of the shoulders and being like, well, can't do anything about that. Because we're called to do things about a lot of things. I mean, look at the Great Commission. You know, you're called to go into the world and make disciples. How can you do that without being a curious person? Because you have to figure out how to connect this gospel of Jesus Christ to people of every different tribe, tongue, and nation in every different time. It's, you know, that command was given 2,000 years ago. People are fundamentally the same and culturally vastly different. So it is curiosity that says, how do I fulfill these commands? How do I engage the world? How do I love people who are different than me or who are in, even take a combative stance to me? I mean, we're in a particularly combative time in our, you know, in our country's history. So curiosity says, how do we bridge those gaps and find empathy in the midst of all that?
I'm talking to Barnabas Piper about his book, The Curious Christian, and B&H has actually made several copies available to give away, which we are going to do. So we'll do this several times through the podcast, and so as of right this very second, the first person who comments on lifewaypastors.com on the post that houses this particular podcast, so if you're listening and you see the post on lifewaypastors.com, the first person to comment said, hey, I'm listening, or I want the book, or hey, Barnabas, or, you know, pay me that $20 you owe me, or whatever, you'll get a book. So I'll be in contact with you, and we'll get that out to you.
But not if you're mean. No, that's mean comments.
That's right. If you're mean, then you have to send us. No, don't even bother.
You have to send me the $20.
We don't want to read your books. All right. So I want to read a quote from page 34. And this kind of has to do with the world in which we are growing up in. You're talking about, and I think you may have kind of coined the phrase uncurious. Are you going to take credit for that?
I've never seen it before, so sure, I'll take credit for that.
It's because it's not a real word. That's right. Why you've never seen it before.
Language is fluid. Curious people know this.
That's true. It's oily sometimes. All right.
You're from Georgia. Y'all make up more words than anybody I know.
We're the king of making up words.
That's right, and mashing them together drawing them out.
That's why I sound the way I do.
God bless you.
All right, so you're talking about uncurious people here, and you say, starting at the bottom of 33, they've never considered who might live in that old rundown house or how long it's been there. They don't really care what breed of horse that is or what the demographic makeup of this neighborhood is. They're not interested in how Santa Claus, Indiana, or Condemned Bar, California got their names. Then you say parenthetically, really, those are actual names of actual towns and real places. And then you continue, they don't think much about the culture of the immigrants in the apartment complex one block over. They don't consider why the city schools perform drastically worse than suburban ones or what the effects of gentrification are on those who are priced out of neighborhoods where they grew up. They don't wonder about the mindset, the training, the perspective, or the motive of the officers policing their town. In these examples, it's easy to see how a lack of curiosity is not just problematic, but tragic. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so other than breed of horses, all of those examples are examples of chasms between people and social divisions. You have issues with schools, you have issues with gentrification, which for those who aren't familiar is the idea when low-priced housing is purchased by people with more money, the value of the houses go up, the value of property taxes rise, and people who are lower income are moved out of the neighborhood. They're outpriced. And it happens
because they can't even afford the taxes anymore to stay in their own house.
And even if they've been there for decades.
Right, right.
So, and it happens in just about every city in the country outside of maybe Detroit, where that nothing is renewing Detroit at this point. I mentioned police officers in there. We're all aware of the complexities of issues of police brutality or police self-defense, and that's why I mentioned motives in there. So what is the mindset of an officer who's facing a perceived threat? Mm-hmm. You've got refugee issues. I mean, that I wrote that more than a year ago, and now there's issues surrounding refugees and deportation and all of these things. So all of that is something that we, and I say we because you and I would be in the same boat and probably most of the listeners are, as generally comfortable middle-class white Christians have no obligation to be curious about. Or at least we don't have a compulsion on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's what I would say. We're not...
And we do have an obligation.
We're not compelled to think about those things generally.
We can go through life without ever considering these complex and difficult issues because they have no effect on us. And that's tragic because we are called to love our neighbors and we're called to be part of the solution in many of those cases, which is figuring out how to give people the dignity that God created them and to love them in material as well as spiritual ways. And we don't find the solutions to it. Mm-hmm. We don't look for it. We don't care about it. We don't have the compassion for them.
Come on, Barnabas. You know the poor are always going to be with us.
That is an exegetical farce for a different podcast. Let's hand that one to Trevin Wax and Brandon Smith for the Word Matters podcast. I may propose that to them. But the curiosity about the people, not just about the issues, it's very easy to be an issue-driven person. I tend that way. But curiosity about the people who are affected, that builds a sense of empathy and care and compassion, which are things that, I mean, compassion is a Christ-like trait. That was a thing that Christ showed to people. He had compassion on the poor, the needy, the children, etc.
Right.
And so that comes from a place of delving into the lives and the needs of those people. And so it's tragic when we have uncuriosity or when we lack curiosity because we're not Christ-like. Mm-hmm. We're not exhibiting Christ. We're not bringing those solutions that are from Christ that we have an obligation to do as Christians to those needs and those people.
Is some of this a result of people just feeling overwhelmed that there isn't a solution this side of heaven, and so they're not curious about what a solution might be because they've already convinced themselves we're so near the end, the Lord's going to come back, and so what's the point?
Yeah, I mean, I think it. we're teetering on the brink of getting into eschatology here, and let's tap the answer on that one as well. But the yes, I think there is an element of, and that kind of goes back to fatalism. This, the world is what it is. It's fallen. You know, come Lord Jesus, fix all this mess. And that's a good thing to pray, but
in the meantime,
yes, but and because we don't know how long the meantime is. You say we're near. But, I mean, it's been 2,000 years. It could be another 2,000. That's,
you know, in 1,000 days or 1,000 years is a day with the Lord.
That's God's business, not ours. So what have we been called to do as image bearers of God? And I do think that we are called to be renewers of culture, of dignity, of human value and human life. So being pro-life in the full complexity of what that means, so the lives of the unborn and the lives of the underprivileged, the lives of the needy and the threatened. And so we cannot just pass it off. Now, the idea of being overwhelmed in the moment is very real. I mean, I just listed 12 problems that could be in a single city, and it is really hard to go, well, what do I do? Well, it's really easy to love. I mean, if you start with love your neighbor, you just find a neighbor. And there's that's how curiosity starts. It starts small. You start with a neighbor. You start with a school, a neighborhood, whatever your point of connection is. And you're not trying to solve the world's problems. You're trying to love your neighbor by delving in this intentionally curious manner.
The book is The Curious Christian. I'm talking to Barnabas Piper. We're going to give away another one. This is weird with it not being like on live radio, where call in right now, and the third caller, you'll get a book.
I mean, you can call in if you want. Our customer service agents will be so confused.
They will not have an idea what's going on. But right now, we'll give one to the first person who comments on the Facebook post underneath this particular podcast. So you'll find it at the Lifeway Pastors Facebook page, and you'll see the block with the Pastor Talk logo in it. And if you're the first person to comment, then I'll be in touch with you, and you'll get a copy of The Curious Christian by Barnabas Piper. Barnabas, how are curiosity and faith related? Oh, let me back up just one second, because you mentioned love your neighbor. And it seems to me like if we're striving to love our neighbors as the Lord wants us to, love him first, love them as we love ourselves, then that love is going to drive us to be curious, because it's going to require us to get inside their lives, learn about them, their what somebody said, their history, their hopes, and their heartaches, or something like that. And then maybe even, it may be that curiosity comes out of love, but the curiosity also drives love or increases love, because once we find these things out, we seek solutions because we love them even more. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think what you're describing is the idea of curiosity making connections. It has a multiplying effect. Every time you discover something, it leads you to another discovery. And especially when it's a pursuit of love or care, these are positive things that sort of pull you forward in a gravitational way. It's not just collection of information as much as it is a deeper understanding of what people need or what culture needs or what we have to offer, and just these points of connection time and time and time again.
I didn't realize there were so many quotes about curiosity outside of Alice in Wonderland. Why do we not talk more about this?
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the word itself sounds childish. You made the joke right off the bat about the Curious George or Curious Case of Benjamin Button, or you mentioned Alice in Wonderland. You know, things just get curiouser and curiouser. And
curiosity killed the cat.
Oh, if only it did.
Well, that's all the time we have for today, folks.
but I think it is not a thing that we think about. It's an adjective that we apply to something else, and usually it's treated as sort of a novelty at best. It's sort of, oh, that's a he's curious about, sort of a guilty pleasure or a hobby or something, but it's not seen as a virtue. Whereas if you go back and look at some of the things that, like, C.S. Lewis wrote about it, or, I mean, there's the quotes scattered throughout the book that found from business leaders and pastors and poets and authors and politicians and whoever else, curiosity is seen as, no, this is like a life force at the risk of using something new agey. I mean, this is a driving trait of people who are successful, people who love other people, people who are good neighbors and good friends and good teachers and students. And we just don't think about it, I think, because we don't think about anything.
Do we think do we, if we think about a scientist in a lab who's chasing after, say it's Thomas Edison, he's looking for that filament that's going to work right,
right,
the compound that's going to work right.
The next thing he can steal from Tesla.
That's right. That's right. Poor Nikola. You're still in our prayers. In a sense, you can say that that's curiosity because he's looking for these different compounds.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not curiosity in the sense that we normally think of curiosity. We think of that, the scientific method, more as research. It's diligence. It's, you know, bringing all your powers of thought to bear on something to figure it out. It's figuring out a puzzle.
And all that sounds so boring.
But nobody's going to look at Thomas Edison and say, wow, what a curious guy.
But they should.
Because, yeah, that's the point that I'm
right,
making. Maybe
yes.
We're thinking about it wrongly.
Because I think if we thought about it as curiosity, it would have a greater attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you talk about putting all your, you know, the scientific method and putting all your thoughts to bear, like, that sounds like work.
Yeah.
Curiosity sounds like a pursuit of what you are passionate about, mm-hmm, or interested in. And that's as it ought to be, because God has infused us with unique perspectives and desires and passions, which is why curiosity can take so many shapes. There are incredibly creative people artistically. There are business leaders, but it doesn't have to be this, you know, this sort of high energy thing. You can be a quiet, retiring person who is passionately curious in a very focused manner. And that's a God-given passion and trait. And so the comparison I use in the book is that there are people who are they're noticers,
mm-hmm,
and so they're curious because they're the ones who are out there and they're just seeing these different connections and making them. And then there's the expert or the researcher, and they're the one who hones in on something and they're always asking, but what else is there?
Mm.
How much deeper can I go? And you think about, you know, some of the top theologians in the world. Those guys are experts. They're not, you know, they don't even have hobbies. They just, but they are perpetually digging deeper into this truth. And the world needs both. The church needs both. Because the expert has this depth of knowledge. The noticer is the one who can look at that depth of knowledge and go, you know who needs that? Those people over there. And they connect the two. And so you have this, again, this web of connections so that it becomes multiplied. But we have to think of that as curious, because otherwise it's everything is a discipline, and everything is a job, and everything is a task. And those are all such dry, heartless, boring words that don't give any passion to anything.
Let's think about kids for a second. Is curiosity not a way... Mm-hmm. Is that not something that we actually do encourage in children? Because we want to find out what their bent is. We want to find out what they're naturally inclined to do. So you've got one child who, you know, follows in the family footsteps and becomes a pianist, and it's just natural. And then you got one that wants to, you know, look at bugs and eats half of them and puts a needle in the other half and sticks them on cardboard.
And we wonder if they're a bit sociopathic or something.
You know, but they can, you know, they don't like the piano, so clearly they're sociopathic. and so is there, as parenting comes, should we learn from our kids, I guess is what I'm asking. If we expect our kids and we want to raise them according to their natural... And I don't say that in the sinful sense, but
right,
in the interested
yeah,
sense, the natural inclinations. There's even school or schools of education that talk about training kids based on what they're interested in first,
mm-hmm,
and then getting all the stuff underneath. Can we learn from our kids in this? If we're going to turn them loose to find out what drives them,
mm-hmm,
then at what point do we as adults say, well, I'm tired of not... being curious and letting that passion drive me for a while instead of just making widgets or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to learn from our kids. So I have two daughters who are 11 and 8 currently, and I discover more things about the world through them, mm-hmm, than through my own intentional efforts. Or at least I'm inspired to discover more things. Because if you ever just go on a walk in a state park with your kids, you will get more questions in that 1 hour about stuff that you have never thought about than... And if you just let yourself think about it, all of a sudden there's recall to things you learned in your past, and there's stuff you realize you just don't know, and then there's engagement with them. So there's points of connection to a million different directions, and that's their just sort of bubbling curiosity. I think the role of a parent is to take their curiosity and teach it maturity, which is not to say squeeze it out of them, but just tell them, show them how and when to be curious and to express that. And the way that I wrote about in the book is the difference between being childish and childlike. Mm-hmm. You know, Paul talks about we need to put away childish things, and that's sort of that selfish, petulant, immature mindset, whereas Jesus condones being childlike and says we should have faith like this. And that is that sense of wonderment and dependence and discovery and sort of the eyes lighting up at things and just the sheer pleasure in whatever's in front of you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's that juxtaposition is where we can learn from our kids. So there's the mindset, there's the questions, but then we bring our maturity to bear to say, all right, that, you know, curiosity is great. You don't get to do whatever you want. You have to channel it so that it can be productive, but we don't want to squash it out of them.
I figured your answer to everything would always be aliens. I mean, I just that's just what I kind of thought. I want to go back to your book one more time as we're kind of getting ready to get to the end here. This is from page 138, and this is going to loop around to leadership and ministry, I think, as far as application from here. We must be curious about the people with whom we work, not just about the work itself, especially if we are in leadership or seek it. The strongest teams and organizations are those full of healthy relationships. The happiest workers are those with healthy relationships. The best leaders are the ones who care about those they lead and are trusted by them, and this is exhibited and bolstered by asking the opinions of others and relying on their expertise. All of these dynamics are furthered and fostered by intentional curiosity. So the question then is, how are leadership dynamics in ministry furthered and fostered by intentional curiosity?
Well, we talked earlier about how curiosity and empathy are connected. Mm-hmm. If you're a ministry leader, you're leading people. You're not leading an organization. I mean, you are. There are organizational elements to it, but it starts with the people. And you can't lead people well unless you have a connection to them and an understanding of them. So curiosity about the individual humans that you lead, the individual image bearers that you lead, because that creates the sense of camaraderie and trust, and it creates an environment where they also want to serve alongside you. But then if you take it out some concentric circles, and then you get into, okay, we've got a congregation. So that we're talking about your staff there, if mm-hmm. you know, if you're in a church or you're the people you're closest to, take it out to a congregational level. Curiosity there becomes maybe more trend-oriented in terms of what are the needs of our community? What are the issues in our church? What are the, you know, what are the theological challenges where our church is facing or questions people are raising? What are the, you know, what are needs? Those kinds of things. And so your curiosity puts you in a position to speak truth to people well, to love them well, to lead them well, to be the kind of person. I think there also is a very real sense about maintaining curiosity about yourself. Mm. And not in a self-centered way, but in a self-evaluative way.
Right.
Because leaders, especially when they get to the top of the heap,
that kind of stops, doesn't it?
It's very easy to, I mean, there's sort of this sense of arrival, mm-hmm. And then they begin to stagnate in their souls and often in their morals and often in their relationships and their character. And so that self-evaluative aspect is really important because it's the thing that it helps us remember who we are in the eyes of God and in our own need for repentance and in our own need for relationship and community and people who will tell us when we stink. And
you stink.
I love you for that, Marty. I can always count on you. And so it's curiosity in pastoral leadership is essential. I mean, the other thing is it will always help you grow. You know, if you need to grow as a preacher, if you need to grow in organizational leadership abilities, curiosity is the driving force behind that. You know, how to preach better, how to explore other ways to communicate, how to organize your time better, and leadership principles and all those things. And so it's just, I could keep going and going, but you can just sort of see the tendrils of it that work its way through just about every aspect of leadership.
This is Pastor Talk, and you've been listening to an interview with Barnabas Piper. My name is Marty Duren. We've been talking about his book, The Curious Christian. And as promised, we have three more copies to give away, and this is how you can get one. You need to listen really close. This is going to take place on Twitter. So if you will tweet, you'll have a much better opportunity to get one of these than some other options, because there are fewer of you that are on Twitter. So if you will tweet this, I'm listening to @LifewayPastors, Pastor Talk with @MartyDuren. If you'll tweet that, or if you can just get remotely close to it, the first three will get a copy of The Curious Christian by Barnabas Piper, and I'll be in touch with you on how to get that to you via the mail or some other shipping mechanism. Barnabas, thanks so much for being here.
It has been a pleasure, Marty.
How can people who don't win the book get the book?
If you go to CuriousChristianBook.com, you can see more about the book there. There's also a short evaluation. You can take about 7 questions, multiple choice. You don't have to type anything out, to give you just a quick sense of what kind of a curious person you are or are not. And then also you can order the book through there.
So, awesome. Thanks so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Pastor Talk is the podcast of Lifeway Pastors and is hosted by Marty Duran. That's me. Join us each week as I interview pastors, authors, professors, and others to help your ministry as you seek to shepherd your flock well. Until next time, this is Marty Duran.